I'd like now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Malena Merlin. She is a poet. She's a translator of poetry. She's co-editor and translator of the new book, The Star by My Head, Poets from Sweden. And she will be presenting the book tonight at Collected Works Bookstore at 6 in the evening. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much for having me.
So this is a collection of translations from the Swedish, and it's facing page Swedish and English poetry by 8 Swedish poets, some of whom are very well known and some not so much in English.
Yes, Thomas Tranströmer is in there, who of course is well known. And also Gunnar Ekelöf is also fairly well known, of course, but many are not at all. So yeah, that was part of the pleasure of doing this book, to bring their poems.
So it's sort of spanning the 20th century. How did you make the selection?
Really just from love, you know. Selected along with my translation partner Jonas Ellerström, you know, the poets and the poems we love the most, and also those poems that lend themselves to be translated. You know, they're poems that just don't want to be translated, so we sort of let them be.
Isn't that funny? What can you characterize? Like, what is it about a poem that wants or doesn't want to be translated?
No, that's impossible. I think, because it's just sort of, it depends, you know. I think some poems that are perhaps more direct, the lines are more direct, I don't know, there's a simplicity, they lend themselves to being translated. I think in the case of Thomas Tranströmer, I mean, he's been translated to over 60 languages. And I think one of the reasons he's received so well in other languages is the simplicity of his syntax, his direct voice, his rather simple line, not simplistic, but simple. So there's something about that, of course, but yeah, it's funny. It's almost like every poem has a personality, and you know,
right.
Some are open to travel and some aren't.
In the introduction to your book, there's a really interesting quotation that you have from Thomas Tranströmer, and he says, "A poem is a manifestation of an invisible poem that exists beyond conventional languages. Therefore, a translation of a poem into a new language is an opportunity to attempt to realize the original invisible poem." That is so interesting and so evocative.
Yes, indeed, I agree. And it's so it's, in a sense, translating a poem, it's not simply, of course, looking at the words and, you know, bringing them across, because then it wouldn't be a translation, because you also have to kind of get in touch with what's behind it, and which is this invisible poem. You know, of course, it's an impossible predicament, so there's that. But the attempt is to kind of make contact with something in the depth behind the poem out of which it might have come originally. So, of course, in order to translate a poem, sometimes it is necessary to change it, of course. Maybe it's in a sense like, you know, rebuilding a house into a new shape with the same bricks. Something like that.
Yeah. Well, and you're a poet, and we've talked about your own work on this show before, and a wonderful poet. And I suppose, on some level, you almost have to be a poet to translate poetry.
Well, people who are not poets do translate poetry. Many scholars do. I think it helps to be a poet, to translate poetry. I do think so. I feel that there's something about the way poets think and approach translation that's slightly different than other people who don't write poetry.
Do you have this experience when you're doing a translation, like you start translating a poem and you work on it, and you craft it, and you go back to the original, and then at a certain moment you know it's done?
Well, there, of course, there's this thing about poetry I'm sure you've heard. I think it was Paul Valéry who said, "A poem is never finished, it's abandoned." I feel like it's possible to say the same thing about a translated poem, because when I translate, I become obsessed, and it's hard to decide when it's done, because you always want to, you know, make it better. You also want to honor the poet. So part of it is, of course, you have to make it as good as it was in Swedish. Whether that's possible, I don't know. But that's the aim and the attempt, anyway.
So we're talking about the book, The Star by My Head, Poets from Sweden, with editor and translator Malena Merling. And I was wondering whether maybe you could choose a poem to read and read it first in Swedish and then in English.
I'm happy to do that.
Okay.
I will read a poem by Werner Aspenström, who was a 20th century Swedish poet, passed away probably mid-90s, and grew up in the countryside. He moved to Stockholm, but even though he lived in Stockholm for most of his adult life, sort of remained a poet who wrote a lot about nature and such things. This poem is, I will read it in Swedish first, and it's called You and I and the World. Du och jag och världen. Fråga inte vem du är och vem jag är och varför allting är. Låt professorerna utreda. De har betalt. Ställ hushållsvågen på bordet och låt verkligheten väga sig själv. Sätt på dig kappan. Släck ljuset i tamburen. Stäng dörren. Låt de döda balsamera de döda. Här går vi nu. Den som har de vita gummistövlarna är du. Den som har de svarta gummistövlarna är jag. Och regnet som faller över oss båda är regnet. You and I and the world. Don't ask who you are or who I am. And why what is is. Let the professors sort it out. It's their job. Place the scale on the kitchen table and let reality weigh itself. Put your coat on. Turn the light off in the hallway. Close the door. Let the dead embalm the dead. Here we walk now. The one wearing white rubber boots is you. The one wearing black rubber boots is me. And the rain falling on us both is the rain.
And that is from the book The Star by My Head, Poets from Sweden, and Werner Aspenström, who was a 20th century poet. And that poem, when I was looking through the book, really, really struck me, because it's in a way saying, don't look for meaning.
Yes, yeah, almost. Yeah, it's almost like maybe it's about being instead.
Yeah.
Somehow, right?
Being
yeah.
in
yeah.
the moment.
Just being, yeah.
Yeah. I would guess that most of our listeners have had little or no exposure to Swedish poetry, but we might have had quite a bit more exposure to Swedish film. And I wondered if there was kind of a connection that you felt between the film tradition and the poetic tradition that have come from Sweden in the 20th century.
Oh, that's a great question. I'm sure, I mean, I'm not an expert on this answer at all, but yes, they must inform one another, of course. And there's something about, I think of in all countries, there's a certain perspective on reality that comes through. Of course, that's a generalization. It's not to say that, you know, the 9 million people in Sweden look at reality the same way. It's not what I'm saying. But there's something that comes through in film and in literature that, yeah, is informed by a particular perception of reality, of how to perceive, you know, how images are portrayed. One of the things I love about these Swedish poets is their imagery, the metaphors, in a way how kind of quiet the poems are.
Yeah, very much so. Quiet and solitary.
Yeah, and that I find so resonating. It resonates so beautifully. I think they write autobiographically differently than American poets, for instance. You know, in the American tradition, the narrative tradition of contemporary poetry, the confessional poets, you know, have a particular style. In Sweden, I think you write autobiographically differently. You know, you don't. It's in a more spare manner.
Yeah, it seems like they're not revealing as many personal details.
Yeah, that's not Swedish. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a different, of course, personality style that comes through. So yeah, there's something about that that I find very evocative. Maybe it's because I'm Swedish.
Well, I mean, we know some clichés about Sweden, like the extremes of day and night. in the summer and winter, and we know about the kind of incredible landscapes that we've seen only in pictures because we haven't traveled to Sweden, most of us. And we know that it's a country with a kind of highly functioning social system, and yet the sense of togetherness, I didn't feel it so much in these poems. It was so much more introspective than I might have expected from a culture, from a society that works so well socially.
Yes, yes. And in contrast to, yeah, American poetry, of course, you know, it's so vast because it's huge. But yeah, if you think of somebody like Whitman, you know, talking about being the multitudes, yes, we don't have that. Yeah, it is more individual. I do think so, yeah.
Correct. Now, do you feel that there is an influence of American poetry in some of the poets of this collection?
Absolutely. I think it does go back and forth. Of course, you know, American... I think that the Swedish poets, of course, yes. For instance, let's take Thomas Tranströmer, who, you know, also translated a lot into Swedish. He translated Robert Bly, James Wright, many others. And in particular in the 60s, you know, he connected with Bly and they became friends. And I think in particular it was because of their poems. They felt like they were doing something in common. They had something in common about the way they were, you know, treating images. Or, but in general, too, yes, Swedish poets read a lot of American poetry. So, yes, indeed.
Would you say that most people in Sweden read English, understand English?
Absolutely, because in Sweden you begin to study English in first grade, I believe it is now. Most children are fluent by the time they graduate high school. And they're on to the, you know, a third language by then. So everybody, yeah. And also because of course, it being a small country and through media and television in movies.
Right.
Yes.
Now you write in English, you write poetry in English. Do you also write in Swedish?
I don't. I write my poems in English because they happened to me in English when I was here, when I had moved here. And I've written maybe two poems in Swedish, but that's it. I have translated into Swedish. I translated one of Philip Levin's collections, 1933, into Swedish and came out in Sweden a few years ago. So I enjoy working in Swedish as well because it is my native language and I want to, you know, keep it going. So,
do you translate your own work into Swedish?
No, never. I would never do that. that would be my idea of a nightmare. Yeah, I don't. That does not. It's not very common that people do that. Although some people do. I think no. It's enough to write them in English. To have to then write them again in Swedish, doesn't make any sense to me.
So this new book has come out, The Star by My Head: Poets from Sweden. And it's really for English-speaking audiences rather than Swedish audiences.
Absolutely, yeah. It was published here, you know, with Milkweed Editions in Minneapolis. And yes, it's supposed to be for English-speaking audiences.
Well, you will be reading tonight at Collected Works poems from this book and talking to the people who come to the bookstore. The event starts at Collected Works at 6 o'clock. The bookstore is on the corner of Galisteo and Water Street here in Santa Fe. Malena Mölling is translator and editor, co-translator and editor of the book The Star by My Head, Poets from Sweden. We want to thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much for having me.